Tonight for our study, I'd like to take you might consider to be an obscure text in the Old Testament. There's no parallel verses to this anywhere else. In fact, as far as I know, there's no mention of this anywhere else in the Bible. And there's a reason for it. And I used to read this quite often and think about it because it has an interesting little idea. It's found in 1 Kings, the 20th chapter. Here we find beginning in verse 39. And as the king passed by, he cried unto the king, and he said, "Thy servant went out in the midst of the battle, and behold, a man turned aside and brought a man unto me and said, 'Keep this man. If by any means he be missing, then shall thy life be for his life, or else thou shalt pay a talent of silver.' And as thy servant was busy here and there, he was gone. And the king of Israel said unto him, 'So shall thy judgment be, thyself hast decided it.'" Now here's a story, and this story is amazing to me. Israel, as oftentimes was the case, is at war. And during this war, an enemy prisoner is captured. And he is the prisoner is brought to this man we're talking about here and given to the man to keep. And they tell the man, if you let this prisoner get away, it'll be your life for his, or else there's going to be a great penalty in silver. Now, I get the idea as I read this. This man couldn't pay a talent of silver. So here's what he's up against. Unless he keeps this person safe and keeps him from escaping, it's going to be his life. And sure enough, the prisoner gets away. And the man sees the king coming. And the king comes up and he begins to tell him, "You know, I got this prisoner during the battle, and they told me to keep him safe, but I was busy here and I was busy there, and he was gone." What do you think the king said? "Oh, that's all right. You're a busy man. You got a lot of things going on. Don't worry about it." Is that what the king said? No, the king didn't say that. The king said, "You knew what the penalty was. You knew what your responsibility was. You decided it for yourself. In other words, you're going to have to pay the penalty for this." And I assume that this man had to give up his life for the prisoner he allowed to escape. How could that ever happen? How could you ever be so negligent about something? Here's the charge you've got. Your only duty is to see this man doesn't escape. And you got busy here and busy there, and the fella got away. What were you busy at? What could be more busy or more important to you than keeping this man safe? It's amazing, isn't it? How could that happen to anybody? But you know what? I find it's not quite so amazing. As a matter of fact, I believe that I can show you and me that we're very capable of that ourselves. This man forgot what his priorities are. His priorities were to keep this man safe. Whatever else he was doing did not begin to measure up to what he had to do, and yet he let the prisoner get away. As we noticed in our introduction just a minute ago, this man in 1 Kings chapter 20, for whatever reason, he allowed his priorities to get warped to the point that he lost the most important thing that he was supposed to be doing. He forgot what really was important because he was too busy somewhere else. He told the king, "I was busy here and busy there, and when I looked around, he was gone." Now that's a pitiful excuse if the king didn't buy it. And you know, I wouldn't buy it either. Because to me, if a person has a superior or supreme priority, like keeping this man safe or else your life's going to be given for his, well, I couldn't have taken my eyes off of him. I'd have to stood right there and watched him because I didn't want him to get away. But the man said he was busy here and busy there. I want to ask y'all a question. Do you ever wonder what is happening to our lives? Why is it that you and I have got in a race, it seems like, on a day-to-day existence where we actually fail to recognize what's happening to us? Our lives are getting away, and it seems like it picks up speed on almost a daily basis. If you believe in conspiracies, you're looking at one who does. I'm very much a believer in conspiracies, and I believe the greatest of all conspirator is the devil himself. And I believe one of the greatest things he's done to hurt and harm us is to cause us to become too busy. We are too busy. And I don't think that that's an accident whatsoever. This is one of the greatest ploys that the devil has, is to keep us occupied with too many other things, to keep us overcommitted until we forget what really is important. He causes us to be interested in all kinds of activities, all kinds of fruitless concerns, rather than having our fixation on doing the Lord's will, having our sights set on heaven. He wants you to be too busy to think about things like that. I find that this is not really new. As a matter of fact, I can go back in the Bible and I can show you somebody else who was locked into this same sort of a situation. The person I'm thinking about is found over in the 10th chapter of the book of Luke. And I'll give you a little background on this. Jesus has got personal friends while he was here on this earth. And some of his friends were a couple of ladies by the name of Mary and Martha. Mary and Martha had the opportunity to have Jesus visit them in Martha's home. So if you can think about it, the Lord comes into Martha's home, and let's see what happens. I'm going to begin reading there at verse 30. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about with much serving and came to him and said, "Lord, does thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me." And Jesus answered and said unto her, "Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things, but one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part which shall not be taken away from her." If you can imagine this scene, here Jesus comes into the house of Martha, and he's sitting in what we'd probably call the living room, and Mary is sitting in there listening to the teaching of Jesus, and Martha is trying to get some food on the table, and every time she walks across the door and sees Mary and Jesus sitting in there, it makes her more aggravated and irritated as the time goes on. And finally, she's got herself worked up, and she comes over to the door, and she says, "Lord, would you tell my sister to get up and help me? I'm overwhelmed with what's going on." And Jesus, just as kind and just as compassionate as only the Son of God could be, says, "Martha, Martha, you're worried about a lot of things. You've got a lot of things on your mind and a lot of things going on. But Mary has chosen the better things. And I'll not take it away from her." Isn't that amazing? Here's Martha. And you know what she's missing? She's missing out on one of the greatest opportunities a human being could enjoy. To have Jesus Christ sitting in her home. To have the opportunity to listen to him. She's missing out on that. Because you know why she's missing? She's too busy. She's involved with too many other things. And I believe that that also has happened to us. I find that this is something, again, which we recognize as a problem. People, if you were to ask most of us, "Are you too busy?" I'd readily say, "Yeah, we're too busy." You'd probably say that yourself. Being too busy is kind of like the weather. We talk about it on a regular basis, but we don't do anything about it. We cannot do anything about it. And it's a strange saying how this is, as far as we're concerned. Most of us, in spite of the fact that we're aware of it, we try to out-busy each other. Now, I live in a little town down in southern Oklahoma, and we go down to Walmart to socialize. That's where we go to see our friends and other church members, and we just have a grand time down at Walmart. Now, you might put this in your mind. Have you, or can you imagine something like this? Can you imagine seeing one of your friends at Walmart, and you walk up to them and you say, "How you doing?" And they said, "Oh, man, I am busy. I mean, I'm working 7 days a week. I work 10 hours a day. I never get to look up. I'm so busy." You're going to let them get away with that? No, you're not going to let them get away with that. They say, "How are you doing?" "Oh, you don't know what busy is. I'm working 8 days a week. I'm working 26 hours a day. I am so busy." Now, why do you do that? Why do we try to out-busy anybody else? Have you ever thought about this? Try this sometimes when somebody gives you this long rigmarole about how busy they are, and they ask you how busy you are, say this: "Well, this morning, I slept in a little while. In fact, it's probably 8:30 or maybe even 9 o'clock before I got out of bed. And then I went in and I got me a cup of coffee. I believe it was the best cup of coffee I ever had. I went out on the front porch and I sat down in one of our rocking chairs out there, and I felt the dawning or the fresh air and all the things about me. I heard a mockingbird sitting on a mailbox jumping up in the air, singing every tongue known to birds. I had the opportunity to enjoy all of these things. It was wonderful, and I sat there for a while and just relaxed, and then I got a little bit hungry. So I went in, had a little brunch. I had a great breakfast, spent my time with it, and then by then, you know, I was ready for a little bout with the lazy boy. So I went out and sat in on my lazy boy, and a couple of hours later, I'm hungry again. So I get up and have lunch, and I had a great day. I didn't really do anything. Would you tell anybody that? No, you wouldn't. You don't want somebody thinking that you're lousing around on the porch, listening to the birds sing, and they're watching the grass grow. You don't want that, because you're so busy. And we've got to the point we think that's the way that we're supposed to be. One sister told me, she said, I don't understand. She said, we got instant, we got quick, we got extra quick, we got high speed, we got super high speed, we got pre-cooked, we got rapid, we got fast, we got no wrinkle, and we got no time. And I agree, that's the way we are. I read this a while back. Y'all remember the country and western group that called Alabama? They recorded this little verse back in the 90s. I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really got to do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry, and I don't know why. Well, I think we're all that away, and I think we need to understand why. And so I'm going to try to let you understand why we're in such a hurry. Now, I'm going to trivialize it. I'm going to make it just as simple and just as worthless as I possibly can, because I want you to see where we're spending our time. First of all, we are in the pursuit of stuff. Stuff. We want more stuff. As a result of that, we're caught up in materialism. We're concerned about building a career. We want to make money. We want to get ahead. On and on the list goes. Why? Because we want a lot of material things. I'm convinced that one of the greatest threats to the Lord's church is materialism. And the reason it's such a threat is it keeps us all too busy all of the time. The second one is simply this. We want something else in our lives. You know what's next? We want fun. We want stuff, and we want fun. We want to be entertained. We've got to be constantly entertained nowadays. Entertainment drives the lives of many. We want television. We want recreation. We want computers. We want computer games. We want sports and hobbies and crafts and travels and shopping. I'm worn out. And that's just the way it is. And I personally think that's too bad, because I believe we're missing out on some things that are really, really important. These two diversions right here are some of the greatest curses the church faces today. The desire for material things, the fact that we have to be entertained. And as a result of that, that begins to slosh over into our spiritual lives. It begins to get us from our everyday lives. And I believe that I can point that out to you in a way that you won't be able to deny it. You know, this too busy and all this pursuit we're in, it is terribly hard on families. It's terribly hard on marriages. It is terribly hard on your spiritual life. Because all of this has to do with selfishness. What we want. What we want to do. I see young people getting married nowadays, and you know, all that they can think about is what they expect to get out of this new relationship of theirs. It is terribly hard for people to get married today. Marriage is the tightest bond that you can put between two human beings, and when you've got two different people and you bind them with the bonds of matrimony, you have to suddenly remember that you've got somebody else to think about besides yourself. You've got somebody else to be concerned about besides just what you want and how you want it and when you want it and all such things as that. People tell me marriage is 50-50. It is no such thing. Marriage is not 50-50. Marriage is 100-100. And you have to work at it. In order to do that, you have to have some time to spend on your mate rather than just on yourself. And this is hard. We teach our children from the time that they're born that they're the center of the universe, that they deserve everything that they can get, that they're supposed to do all these things which can accumulate for them more stuff and more fun. And they think that's the way life really is. because you and I as parents taught them that. We have done all these things for them, and we fail to recognize we've skipped the things which really are important. I see parents nowadays that they got their children a tricycle before they can lift their head off the pillow. They got them a bicycle before they can walk, and they got them a car before they can drive. All of these things cause people to begin to think, this is the way life really is. Well, life's really not that way. I find that there are other things which we need to be concerned about. First of all, I want to talk about on our families. You know, in order, and one of the greatest requirements in order to have the type of family that you'd like to have is some of your time. Your time. Now, there are a lot of things that we can talk about, but time is very, very valuable. Time is something that once it ticks off, we can't call it back. And you have to make arrangements to have some time if you want the family you want. This includes time for our children. Dr. James Dobson, y'all probably know about him, who writes about child rearing and marriages and such of that. He said, in our efforts to give our children what we never had, we failed to give them what we did have. Mothers and fathers who had time for their children. Y'all know that I've got two grown girls now. And I think about my girls often. You know what I wish I could do for my girls if I could go back when they were just about that tall? You know what I wish I could do for them? I wish I could buy them nicer clothes. I wish I could get them more toys and things to play with. I wish I might be able to get them in a better school. I wish I might get them a car before I did. Is that what you think? If that's what you think, you couldn't be any more wrong. You know what I wish I could do if I could have them back about like that? I wish I could just reach down and pick them up and hug them one more time. That's all I would really, really like to do for them and do for me. And the idea is, if you're going to hug your children, you got to do it now, and you got to do it soon, and you got to do it fast. Because the next time you look around, they're going to be about their own business. I had a daddy tell me one time, who was a very poor father. He said, you know, I'm trying to get ahead while my children are young. I'm trying to accumulate some money for college. I'm trying to buy them this, that, and the other. And I'm trying to get them a lot of stuff and fun. That's not what he said. That's what he meant. And you know, I didn't tell him I should have. I would if I had to do again. I tell him, let me tell you what you're going to find out. By the time you get all this stuff lined out for your children, you're going to discover that your children now don't have time for you. They've got themselves immersed in this same rat race that you're in. And they don't have time for you anymore. So you missed out. You missed it. You have to spend this time while you have the opportunity. The proverb writer said, the 29th proverb, verse 15, a child left to himself bringeth his mother to shame. I'll expand on that a little bit. A child left to himself will bring his father to shame too. You have to have some time for your children. You know, another thing, you have to have some time for your wife, time for your husband, whichever the case might be. I see couples nowadays, and you know, I tell this little story, and some folks laugh at it. It's all right if you want to laugh at it, but it's really not funny. A man come around to me just recently, and he said, I can't retire. He said, I just can't retire. He said, I can't, and he pointed to his wife, I can't live with that woman 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Now, folks, that's a tragedy. Here he's put in his 30 years where he works. She's put in her 30 years where she works. They're coming home like two strangers. They don't even know each other. The reason they don't know each other, they never had any time to build any bonds. They never had any time to share anything. They never had any time to grow an appreciation for the other one. And now then, he can't even think about living with that woman. Sad commentary. But a lot of people find themselves in that exact condition because they didn't take the time to build what was necessary. You know, I look again and I think about Mary and Martha. Luke chapter 10, verse 39. Mary sat at Jesus' feet and heard the words of the Lord. Martha was too busy. Now think about this. Here's Martha's chance to sit down with Jesus and hear those red letter words that you got in the Bible. the ones Jesus said, she has the chance to sit down there and hear them from the Savior. But she's too busy. Now you might think, oh, that's a little thing. No little thing. That's a great big thing. She's missing the chance of a lifetime. Here Jesus is sitting in her living room and she's in the kitchen stewing around. You see how silly that is? And you don't want to miss out on something like that. I'd like to show you, sort of do an assessment, I guess you might say, of the damage that too busy does to our spiritual lives. And I ran up on this in a personal study I was doing. Every winter when I get home, after my meeting schedule, I try to pick some book in the Bible and study it all winter. And I did that this past, 2 years ago, I guess it was. I studied the book of Malachi. Malachi is the last book in the Old Testament, little bitty book, and I never had given any time to it. So I got Malachi out, and I didn't think, you know, there must not be much to it. I never hear anything about Malachi, but I'm glad I studied Malachi. You know what? We try, oftentimes in our lives, just to give God the leftovers. They were trying that back in Malachi's day. We just want God to take the time that we don't have use for anything else, and we think He'll be happy with that. Listen to what Malachi said about it in Malachi, the first chapter, verse 7. Ye offered polluted bread unto mine altar, and ye say, wherein have we polluted thee? In that ye say, the table of the Lord is contemptible. And ye offer the blind for sacrifice. Is it not evil? And ye offer the lame and the sick. Is it not evil? Offer it now unto thy governor. Will he be pleased with thee and accept thy person, saith the Lord of hosts? Did you hear that? In Malachi's day, they made sacrifices. So here's what they're saying. You know that old loaf of bread laying over there in the corner? It's got moss growing on it. Let's get that and give it to the Lord because it's not good for anything else. You know that old blind ewe out in the flock that runs into every fence post she comes by and every tree she passes? Let's offer her as a sacrifice to God before she breaks her neck and we'll lose her entirely. And then Malachi says, you think that'll work? Try it with your governor first. Now listen, because you don't want to miss this. Saith the Lord of hosts, you know what Malachi is saying? Do you know who you're dealing with? Saith the Lord of hosts, we're dealing with God. We're not dealing with something out here that you might be able to force these things off on. A moldy bread and a blind sheep. We're dealing with God. And he says, do you think the Lord of hosts is going to accept your cast off? Malachi, the first chapter, verse 13. You say also, behold, what a weariness it is that we have snuffed at it, saith the Lord of hosts. You brought that which is torn and the lame and the sick. Those you brought for an offering. Should I accept this at your hand, saith the Lord? He said, he brought all this stuff. You think I'll accept that? You know, hear it again. I find that this is something which we have to deal with. Let me ask you a personal question. When you find yourself in a conflict, you know, this is what I really ought to do as a Christian because this is my responsibility. But here's something I really want to do. And, you know, this is a lot of fun or this is a... Which one wins? Now, if you find this one over here winning all the time, you need to reevaluate. Because this one can't win all the time. You have to recognize that God has to come first in this business. And it's not something that he'll take just whatever's left over. I'm amazed at the attitude which a lot of people have today. Let me tell you a personal story that happened to me about 3 years ago now. I went to a place I hadn't been to in probably 30 years. All the people that I knew originally were all dead or gone. And I was getting ready to go up to preach. And a young man, one of the young leaders, came up to me. And I didn't know him from Adam's house cat. And he walks up to me and he said, how long do you preach? Now, Shahe's with me on this. Preachers understand what's about to happen. How long do you preach, he said. And I said, well, just depends. I said, most of the time, you set your watch by it, I preach about 40 minutes. And he's sucking through his teeth and he says, nope, nope. That won't work. And I'm standing here and he's standing right there. And he says, that won't work here. Said, we got to have respect for our visitors. Said, we have visitors that travel quite a little ways, and we don't want more than 30 minutes. Now, that's not a good thing to tell anybody anytime, but it's sure not a good thing to tell a preacher about time he's getting ready to get up and preach. And I'm standing there, and I'm trying to think of a civilized reply, and it finally come to me. I said, I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up there in a few minutes, and I'm going to preach as long as I want to. And if the visitors don't like it, they don't have to come back. And I huffed off, which probably wasn't all that great, you know. And that's what I did. I just did my regular thing. Now, I don't want to leave it like that because it's not as bad after you find the end. After it was over with, the brother come back. And he said, well, I'll have to admit, I believe that is the fastest 40 minutes I ever sat through. So you see, it all depends on your priorities. You know, I find people who tell me 30 minutes is all that you can stand and keep somebody's attention. That's baloney. Maybe you're talking about attention for the gospel or attention for God, but that's not all that people can give their attention to. I see people in the middle of the summertime sitting out in the baking sun watching a baseball game. They sit out there 3 or 4 hours at a time. It's a hot and heavy, you can hardly breathe, and have a great time. Same people that are dead in the winter can go out to a football game, sit on a concrete bleacher with a north wind blowing up their pant leg, and have a great time for 3 hours. Some of us can go out in the woods and hang a death-defying contraption 30 feet up in the air and sit out there all day long and have a great time. So you see, this 30 minutes all you can stand is just not true. It all depends on what you like the best. And we have a problem with giving the Lord an uninterrupted 40 minutes. Something wrong with that, isn't there? You know, when I first started preaching, I had several things like this come up. I never will forget a brother come around one time, and he asked me if I'd come and hold him a meeting. I said, sure. I'd love to come and hold y'all a meeting. I said, would you like to have a meeting here in the spring? He said, no, not in the spring. Now, this really did happen. It took a little longer than it's going to take me to tell it. I said, you know, but it's nice here in the spring. I'll come and hold a meeting in the spring if you'd like that. He said, no. Since in the spring, school's letting out and we have to plant the garden. So I said, how about summer? I'd be happy to come in the summer. He said, no. Said, in summer, you know, we all go on vacations. Besides that, it's too hot. And I said, how about the fall? Now, I've been keeping score. He hasn't. I said, how about the fall? I said, I'll come in the fall. No. In the fall, you know, school's taken up, and we got to put up the garden. I said, how about the winter? He looked at me like I'd lost my mind. He said, we don't have a meeting in the winter. It's too cold. Now, you see what he told me? He just told me, now, preacher, we want you to come and hold a meeting. We want you to reprove and rebuke and exhort. We want you to leave us on a high spiritual plateau. And if we can find some time between the letting out to take it up of school or putting out to take it into the garden, the heat and the cold, you come running. That's what he told me. He told me they didn't really have time for a meeting. And that's becoming very, very common. Churches that used to have 3 full-time, full-length meetings have 2 or 1. Ones that used to have 1 have a abbreviated 1. When I first began to preach, now I never did any of these. I just heard about them. Some of the old preachers, you know, they used to start on a Sunday, and they would preach sometimes for 30 days and wind up on a Sunday. They preached twice a day, a lot of them did. Now, I don't think we can do that. That's just not, our society couldn't handle a meeting like that. 30 days, preaching twice a day, I don't think that's necessary. Also, there were some of the preachers, after I got started, that held what you call a 2-week meeting. This starts on Sunday, it ends on the next Sunday. 2 weeks, really, 2 weeks and a day. I never did hold one of those even. When I started, we held 10-day meetings. We started on Friday night, and we went through two Sundays. We went through a Sunday and closed on a Sunday. And I've held a ton of 10-day meetings. I've extended a few meetings. You know, it was going so well, I'd extended them to Wednesday. That's the longest time I've ever held meetings. Sometimes getting on to Wednesday. More and more now, I'm called for 8-day meetings. Start on Sunday and close on Sunday. And I'll have to admit, I believe that's about optimum time nowadays because we're so busy. 8 days. But more and more, I'm being called for 5-day meetings. You start on Wednesday and you close on Sunday. 5 days. That's the thing nowadays. But you know, I get calls for 3-day meetings, Friday through Sunday. I got a call a while back from West Virginia. Y'all know I live in southern Oklahoma. To come way out to West Virginia and hold a 3-day meeting. It takes me 2 days to get to West Virginia, 2 days to get home, and I'm just going to get to preach 3 days. Something wrong with that, isn't there? You know, in 3 days, you can't even make anybody mad. That's a waste of time and effort. 3-day meetings. And you know, I get called for 2-day meetings. They want me to come on Saturday and close on Sunday. I even get some calls for some 1-day meetings. Can you have a 1-day meeting? Well, I guess. What does this show us? I'm deadly serious about this. What does this show us? We don't have time for meetings. Many of the churches no longer have meetings, which I think is a tragedy. Something's happened to us. And I think the fact is we've gotten too busy. I held a 10-day meeting last year, and I told the man that was in charge, I said, you just watch with me. Thursday night, everybody will be so worn out, they can hardly keep their eyes open. He said, that won't happen here. And I said, yeah, it will. And that's what happened. The men especially that were getting up and going to work every day were so worn out, some of them couldn't even come. They were worn out because we're too busy. Too many other things going on. And again, we need to get control of these sort of things. It is something which diminishes our spiritual vitality. We've been described as being like children in a candy store. Too many selections, too many opportunities, too many things going on. And that's the way our lives are. We've got so many activities, we've got so many things leading us in the wrong direction that spiritual growth is almost impossible. Many Christians are going around out of gas because they're spent on too many other things. I guess I could say that there are several things that you and I have to involve ourselves in. For instance, most of us, now let's write this right over here, we recognize as Christians the number one thing in our life is supposed to be God. The Bible teaches us to put God first, Matthew 6, verse 33. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these other things will be added to you. So, number one, we don't argue about that. We're supposed to have God first. Now, most of us have marriages, and you better be tended to your marriage if you want the kind of marriage that you'd like to have. Most of us have a family. We don't. We expect that someday. We expect to have a family. Most of us have a responsibility to make a living. And I believe every Christian man is responsible, if he's able-bodied, to make a living. That's a responsibility. And I also believe this. I believe every single one of us needs some rest and some recreation. I do believe that. Now, how do you do all that? We got God first, our marriages, our family, our living, and rest, and recreation. Well, you have to have some balance. You can't do them all at once, but you have to have balance here. You have to spend the proper amount of time on each one of these things. It is a juggling act, is the best way that I know to describe it. When I was home one winter, Deborah, my oldest daughter, was about 10 years old. And she came into my study, and I was sitting over behind the desk. And she came in, she said, Daddy, I want to tell you something. She said, I'm going to learn to juggle. And I said, well, good for you. You just learned to juggle. And she left. You know, in about 4 or 5 days, she came back. And she had 3 tennis balls. And she just walked up to the desk and she starts in. I'm amazed. She's got them all going. You know, to get three balls going at one time is really hard. Now, just one ball, I could do that. Now, if it didn't get too fancy, well, I believe I could juggle one. You know, I might even juggle two balls. Got two. Again, let's keep it simple. Two balls. I might could do that. But three, you know, with three, you got one in the air all the time. You know what it takes to be able to juggle like that? It takes concentration. It takes dedication. It takes effort. It takes practice. It takes commitment. It takes balance. And that's what we need here. We need to recognize a balance in our lives. Not all or none, but all of them the proper way, with the proper consideration. And as I said, it takes some effort to do that. Not all or nothing, but a balance in our lives. I would like to, as I draw the lesson down to a close, I'd like to give you something to think about from the Scriptures that I hope will help you to get a grip on your lives. This is something that we find. Jesus, while he was here upon this earth, wouldn't you say Jesus was busy? There's no doubt about it. He was extremely busy. But you know, Jesus wasn't too busy. As a matter of fact, the Bible says in Mark 1 and verse 35, "Now in the morning, having risen a long while before daylight, he went out and departed to a solitary place, and there he prayed." He wasn't so busy that he forgot to speak to his Father. Luke 5 verse 16, "So he himself often withdrew in the wilderness and prayed." That was a habit of Jesus. He didn't get so busy that he forgot his priorities. I find that this is something that you and I can work at also. It is something that I'd like to offer some suggestions on. And this is for every Christian in the audience this evening. Here's something that we're going to start with. And this is sort of a little disclaimer I always like to give. You can do this at home. This will be all right for you to do at home. First thing is turn off the television or turn off the computer. It may get deathly quiet, but it's all right. And you won't die or nothing like that. Turn it off. Got that television or computer or whatever you play with? You got that turned off? Okay. Now then, reach over and pick up your Bible. It's probably pretty close. Most of us keep them pretty close to wherever we sit habitually. Got your Bible? Yeah. All right, now here's what you do. And I'm going to keep this real simple to begin with. Just open it up. Doesn't matter where. That's what's wonderful about this book. There's no fluff in this book. There's nothing extraneous in this book. There's nothing that's not useful. It's all good stuff. Every single bit of it. So just let it open up. And look down through there and pick you a place to start reading. Any place to start with. Read. Maybe read two verses or three verses. And this really will work, believe me. You got two or three verses you read now? Close your Bible. And sit there and meditate. Think on what you just read. Think of what you just read. And this wonderful part is, it doesn't matter where or what it was. Just think on it. Now, I have to give you a little warning. This practice can lead to a quiet and peaceful life if you make it a regular habit. Think on it. My conclusion is simply this. We need to work to slow our busy lives down. The rat race that we all get ourselves involved in is unwinnable. You cannot do it all. You need to aspire to lead a quiet and peaceful life. Listen to these verses. 1 Thessalonians 4, beginning of verse 11. "And that you study to be quiet and do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you may walk honestly toward them that are without and that you may have lack of nothing." How do you have lack of nothing? Constant clamoring for all this stuff? No, that's not the way you get it. He says, here's where you get it. Study to be quiet. Do your own business. Work with your own hands. Walk honestly toward all. And you'll have lack of nothing. There's a key to it. And people that spend themselves in a frustration trying to get it are missing out where the source is. In our busy life, we need to learn to take time to be holy, as we sometimes say. Take time to be holy. There's a sister at home, and she's a sweet little lady, and she always wants to ask a question when Carl or myself come in from meetings. She comes around with a question. She asked me a question a while back. She said, "What do you think is the most frustrating thing that you have to deal with in preaching the gospel?" Now, believe me, there's plenty of frustrating stuff to go around. But I'm trying to think, what would I say is the most frustrating? I don't know if I've got it for sure, but here's the way I feel about it right now. The most frustrating thing that I have to deal with is the fact that we do not take the Christian life as being urgent. We don't think about it as being urgent. It's something we need to be busy at. It's something we need to be doing. It's imperative that we recognize it's urgent. And I don't know what you do to cause people to come to that realization.